Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. Hi, I'm Larry Mueller, and really pleased to welcome back today the Vicars of Vegetables from the UW-Madison Department of Horticulture, Erwin Goldman and Jim Nian, who is with us to answer your gardening questions and to, I'm sure we're going to spout out a few haikus. We'll give you some background on that. And look forward to hearing from you. Maybe you've got a haiku you want to share. We have a bunch of them already up on our Facebook page, and I hope you go to the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page and you'll see some of them. In the meantime, if you have a question, I hope you'll join us. You could post on the Facebook page a question, or you could call us. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234, or you could simply email us at talk@wpr.org, and we would love to hear from you. Jim Nianos, welcome back.
Hey, great to be here.
Erwin Goldman, great to see you again as well.
Thanks for having us back, Larry.
How are your gardens doing? Let me ask you that. Jim, how's your garden doing?
Wow, you know, actually, I would have to say it's shaping up to be a pretty good year.
It is.
I mean, my tomatoes, no early blight, no late blight. My peppers are growing. My biggest problem this year has been with deer.
Oh.
Deer are munching. And the way I have of controlling the deer population is apparently not, and there's some legal issues. I don't know. So I'm really strangling has been one of the alternatives.
Strangling.
I'm like wrestling them. I like chase them down. I wrestle them and then kind of strangle them. Is that acceptable, Erwin?
Jim, if you could catch one, I think it'd be acceptable.
Oh, you should see me. I sneak. I sort of hide. You know, I like leak. You know, behind the. You know, leap up from behind the peppers. Right. Really? There's a YouTube of me out there on this particular issue.
Well, those impulses are instinctual. Yes. I think in all of us. So.
How's your garden, Erwin?
Larry, I have to say that this year, if you'd asked me a month ago or 6 weeks ago, I would have been very concerned. But things are surprisingly excellent this year.
Yeah.
The rains we've had, the temperatures we've had, I would say things are on average at least a week to 2 weeks late. But but aside from that, it has just been an incredible year.
I have five varieties of tomatoes. Every one is doing just mm-hmm. great. There's a new one that I can't remember the name of it, but it's a red and white striped, red and yellow striped tomato. Mm-hmm. So supposedly when you cut it open, it'll be striped with the red and the yellow.
Mm-hmm. Oh. Very nice. Is that an heirloom? Is that an heirloom? Because Jim does have some issues with the heirloom types. Or is this a new?
That's a new one.
It's a new one.
Yeah, it's a new one.
No, the striped. I was just thinking, what is the generic name for that? You know, the convict tomato. The last time we were on,
there were some
big issues regarding the. Remember the topsy turvy?
Yeah, sure.
And that's never been adequately resolved for me.
There is a gravity issue there. Now, are you growing that still again?
Are you growing them upside down?
No, I gave up on them. I had a good year, and then the second year. I had nothing, mm-hmm. and I just decided to forget the topsy-turvy.
Mm-hmm. It's not like we
it's in the basement.
This, did we, Erwin?
Oh, boy. Well, topsy-turvy. I know you can't do peppers topsy-turvy. David has a question from Madison about peppers, so let's go David. Yeah, David, hi.
Good morning. Thanks so much for taking my call.
Sure.
So I have some Wank's Yellow Hots and some Joe's Long Cayennes in a raised bed box.
Ooh.
And they're doing well. They're tall. They've got peppers. They've got flowers. But over the last couple of weeks, I've noticed this sort of creep of yellowing of the leaves going from the root, you know, kind of working up. My wife jokes about how much I dote on those peppers, and I'd hate to lose them. Right next to those, I've got a Thai hot that's doing great and some sweets and some reds. And there's a little bit of yelling, but not very much. So I'm really concerned about these guys. Do you have any idea what I should do about that?
Wow. So the yellowing is starting at the bottom of the leaves and working at the bottom of the plant and then working its way to the top? Is that how you describe it?
Yep. And the Wank's Yellow Hot, you know, itself, the plant is probably a foot tall. I mean, so there's a, you know, and that's kind of working its way. It's, you know, it's probably halfway up now. The soil, it's a pretty rich mixture.
Do you grow peppers in the same soil every year? Or members of the same of the Solanaceae family every year?
This is my first time doing this. Kind of a first-year gardener.
Then I would suggest it might very well be simply a lack of nitrogen.
Okay. I started out with really rich compost from like the Dane County compost site.
Was it composted compost or was it, you know, fresh leaf kind of compost?
Well, it's kind of whatever we get from the Dane County compost site. I'm not even sure where they get that. That's probably leaf, I would guess.
But was it nice and black and
it was nice and black, yep.
Soil-like? Okay.
Yep, nice and black and soil-like. And then I put in a bunch of sand, you know, because I had heard that you want to make the raised bed with peppers be able to drain.
Well, I was worried. I was thinking that it might be, you know, a fusarium or something that would occur.
Any curling of the leaves?
Not on those two.
Okay.
No.
Because sometimes a yellowing is a viral thing, that, but it's often accompanied by leaf curl. So I would agree with Jim.
I would guess that it might be as simple as a nutritional imbalance, mm-hmm. here. And I think, and probably, and even though you put that compost in, you know, that sand, etc., it might be simply a nitrogen issue.
Okay.
So I would give it a little. Let's see. What a good organic. Are you in the organic thing? I applied fish emulsion. Irwin,
oh.
Just because I was really into the organic.
Sure.
I was like,
sure.
I was really, really organic. It's 5% nitrogen.
Okay.
But that 5% nitrogen does not overcome the actual penetrating odor of this organic source of nitrogen is really, there's a cost benefit there that is really not adding up for me, you know, and it just did not work.
What about vermicompost? I got a bag of vermicompost.
Anything high in, you know, try to get some quick source of N, right, that the plant will can absorb quickly.
Okay.
My favorite is actually, you know, 20-20-20, mm-hmm. right, that you get over at the, but those, you know, that's a chemical. Mm-hmm. Rather than an organic source. But you want a rapid source. I'm guessing that you're probably a little light in nitrogen.
Okay.
And especially, you know, the rapid growth that we've been experiencing the last week
point.
Or 10 days.
Yeah.
I would say, because I say this only because I just fertilized my peppers.
Okay.
And that's, and I just put on that really awful, is there a way to apply fish emulsion? Or was it just the general nastiness of me and my clumsiness spilling it all over? But my God, what a penetrating odor, right? Even the deer, although it did attract the deer.
Oh, it did.
Oh yeah.
Attracted the deer. Oh, good.
Okay. Well, thanks.
Yeah, thanks sure. a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. We have an haiku from Sandy in New Berlin.
Oh, cool.
And haikus, we have to, before we get to that haiku, we should mention. You guys had a speaking engagement recently. Tell us about that.
We did. We were so fortunate to be invited to the Kettle Moraine Garden Club by Cynthia C., who is one of their members. And it was just an absolutely delightful opportunity. And this is not your average garden club. I mean, they are into all sorts of issues in horticulture and natural resources. And in addition, they turn out to be a crop of poets. And they wrote maybe, I don't know, 20 of their members put together haikus. They are now posted on your Facebook page, Larry.
Yep.
And I'm not a Facebook user, so I asked our producer, Judith, here, and she explained to me that one does not need to be a Facebook user in order to see these haikus. They are
right.
available to anybody if you go on the Garden Talk website.
Go to the Larry Mueller Show.
The Larry Mueller Show, exactly. And you'll see a section called Haikus by members of the Kettle Moraine Garden Club. And Larry, I don't know if this is an appropriate time, but Jim and I would love to read a few of them.
Irwin, I think you have to read your favorite, Irwin.
Well, there are so many good ones, but let me just share a couple. Because
a random great haiku.
Steam rises from the black top. Air thickens like butter. Summer at midday. I mean, does that just evoke a garden scene? I mean, they're just beautiful, I think. And I actually, so the members of the club got up and read some of these. Let me just read you another one here. Look east to the sun. Hear cries for fresh water. Sow the seeds of life.
Oh,
I mean, it's just, it's beautiful. And I'll read one more. I want to read one from Judith, who is the producer of this show, because hers has an element of haiku poetry that I think is in some of the best haiku, and that is that kind of that kind of twist at the end. And this
a cruel twist.
And it's also 5-7-5.
It's 5-7-5. She did a beautiful job. And here it is. Neighbor's black walnuts, container garden instead. I beat the poison. I mean, that's just, you know,
that's great.
Yeah. So I am just so thrilled to know that there is a listening audience out there that is writing poetry. And apparently you have some callers.
Well, yeah. Well, there was a haiku from Sandy in New Berlin. And this one says, born of a small bud, nurtured by sunshine and rain, a sweet bloom appears. 5-7-5.
What is the 5-7-5 thing? Does that have anything to do with a haiku?
we don't strictly interpret that 17 syllable.
Yeah, okay. I mean, we've never really paid close attention to that.
We don't grade them or anything.
No, yeah.
But there is a tradition of the 17 syllable 5-7-5. It is beautiful, but there are many beautiful forms, right?
Yeah.
I
would definitely agree with that.
Yeah.
Well, so send in, if you got a haiku, send it in to our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. We'll see if we can read it.
And call it in.
Or call it in. Yeah, call it in at 1-800-642-1234. Joy in West Bend, though, has a question for you guys. So let's go there. Hi, Joy. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Thank you. We have a bed of asparagus that we've had for years, and it's full of weeds. Quackgrass, amongst other things. So this year we decided to put in another bed of asparagus where some seeds had blown in the wind, and a small bed was started, so we just continued
added
there.
Added to it. Mm-hmm.
Nurtured. You nurtured it, Judith.
Yeah, so we dug those things that looked like graves and put in our asparagus roots and put some dirt on top, and we've got, you know, this is a fairly weed-free area, but we've got quackgrass coming along the sides, and
boy,
so
that's a tough one.
Number one, I want to know when do I put more dirt in? We've got just a few little spears, teensy spears coming up, and number two, you know, will it be sufficient for me to just keep going out there pulling up those quackgrass pieces?
Well, it all depends on how you feel about Roundup. Personally, I feel it's a magnificent way of controlling those grasses, and I personally have certified it as organic.
Yeah. Boy, but you point out a really tough problem. I mean, that is a very hard weed because of the way it propagates by rhizomes, I think, underground. It is just so hard to get it all. But yeah, I think it's that concerted effort, spending time out there. If you're not a Roundup person.
Yeah, if there really isn't really too much you can do. And frankly, just kind of pulling it out by the roots, what I'm told, maybe you've told me, Erwin, is that it helps the quackgrass spread.
It will. And in fact, if you don't, and if you pull it up and you leave it on the soil, it'll re-root. It's a very difficult plant because of the way it propagates. So you really have to just use very intense, concerted effort over time to get those plants out of the ground and remove them completely from your garden.
On the other hand, you know, you have to look at the glass half full.
Yeah. You know?
And you've got to say to yourself, it could be worse. You know, like the crabgrass, you know, it could be, it's at least it's close to the soil.
It's green.
Yep. It's not that bad. I mean, I would have to say that, you know, the worst weed that I have ever encountered is this perennial milkweed.
Oh, that thing.
And it, you know, it produces that latex.
The latex, that's
and
right.
And your hands stick together, and there's just no way. You don't get that with crabgrass. I mean, you can rip at it. You can dump it into your wheelbarrow. It's not an issue.
Good point.
But that perennial milkweed, there's an evil there. there's a weed evil there that I have not been able to really deal with effectively.
Good point. Yeah.
Thanks, Joy, for calling. Appreciate your call. We're talking with the Vicars of Vegetables today, UW horticulturist Erwin Goldman and Jim Nienhuis. I'm Larry Mueller. Judith Sears-Poisson, our producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Taking your questions at 1-800-642-1234, your gardening questions, that is, especially zeroing in on veggies today with our two Vicars of Vegetables, and Garrett in Mineral Point up next with a question. Hi, Garrett.
Hi there. I'm calling with a question about wilting tomatoes. We're a younger gardener, new to gardening, and we've got three varieties in there: Goliath, Roma, and Beefsteak.
Cool.
And it was only the Goliath that started wilting this week until today, and now we've got the Beefsteak starting to wilt off a little bit. And I'm wondering if you have any ideas as to
is
what it
is. Is it a new garden?
It is a brand new garden.
Brand new garden. Are there any residual, like, lawn chemicals, that sort of thing? I know that there's a possibility that, you know, this could be, you know, a viral, you know, infection, but I've recently come across some situations where, in fact, it turned out, I think, that it was, you know, residual chemicals used for lawn control, because the chemicals that are used for lawn control broadleaves, and tomatoes are by far the most sensitive to this.
Is a diagnostic thing for this the brown tissue inside the stem? In other words, if you cut open a stem, do you have brown vascular tissue? That's often the verticillium. Do you have that?
No, I don't. Looks good inside.
So,
and you know what's interesting is the Roma tomatoes look fine.
Well, yeah. Those are the best
so far.
Anyway.
Mm-hmm. So far.
Typically with a bacterial wilt or verticillium wilt, you get a brown coloration of the vascular tissue on the inside. For those wilts anyway. Now, fusarium wilt also, I think, gives you the brown coloration. But you're skeptical, Jim.
Only because, you know, it's a new garden, and I wonder how long, you know, are the plants very tall? Have they really developed? Is this something that's developing, you know, as the roots are expanding? And I'm just a little concerned that it may be in a brand new garden area. Mm-hmm. It may be a residual.
Perhaps a gardener spraying Roundup where it wasn't required or something.
Well,
like that. I just think
Roundup,
you know,
is certified organic by me, but not by everyone. But some of the chemicals can have a residual effect. And so, I mean, in a garden like that, you wouldn't expect, if there's not been solanaceous crops, you wouldn't expect a buildup of, you know, the fusariums, et cetera. Mm-hmm. It could be that, you know, there's a virus that would be transmitted, right, by an aphid or a leafhopper. But again, you know, if this, and the distinction among the varieties is puzzling to me. Garrett, I don't have a good answer.
But that's a good guess, though.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the solution to that is...
the solution to that, Larry, is to enjoy the Romas and to create a haiku that...
if the plants weren't dead yet, I'd water them and continue to try and keep them going, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks, Garrett. Rodney in Fountain City, on to you. Hi, Rodney.
Well, good morning. I have a haiku for you, and I have always thought that good haiku should resemble a Kodak moment. And I do not know the author of this, and perhaps it's from one of my former students, but I think it fits into a garden on a hot day. So here it is. The night was hot.
The night was hot.
Stripped to the waist.
Stripped to the waist.
The snail enjoyed the moonlight.
Oh, you caught me on that one. Oh, well done, Rodney.
Good surprise ending.
Huh? Yeah, good surprise ending.
Have a good day.
No,
thank you.
That was a Polaroid moment. Right? Because, I mean, you do capture that.
Yeah.
Isn't that the beauty of the haiku, the mental image, right?
Yeah.
You just close your eyes.
Exactly.
You capture that moment. This is what your ladies did, Bourbon.
That's right.
They were capturing the moment. Absolutely.
They were.
Email from Susan in Waukesha. It's been quite a few years since I've grown broccoli. Could you refresh my memory on how to care for it? We have a lot of plants in and don't want to mess it up.
Oh, I'll plant them either early or late. Don't try to grow that in during the summer.
Okay. Right?
So I would say the best broccoli is going to be probably my best success really is with fall, right? Broccoli in the fall is the way to go. And I would, in fact, here's what I would do. I would plant, what are we, July? What is this, like the first or
it's
something?
It's like the first of July.
Okay.
Yeah.
I would say you could plant it as late as mid-July. You know, start it in a little container, transplant it, you know, in August, and you'll have broccoli. And I would do some cauliflower for the fall as well. But the brassicas in the fall, I think, are the most successful.
Is there any Roundup in this particular prescription?
No.
Or is this done completely without any chemical additives?
You know, I'm totally organic in this. You know, it's just that I agree with you. You know, I try to do my own rules, you know, the organic rules. And Jim's organic rules allow.
They're flexible.
They're flexible. But, you know, it's like Larry is so concerned about this 5-7-5 thing.
Yeah, yeah. Like, why be so rigid?
Like, what's the issue there? Yeah. You know, I mean, if you capture the moment with a 3-10-3, I mean, isn't that just as good?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I agree with you on the cold sweetening aspect, though. That is the best, you know, with the fall brassicas.
But if they're already in the ground,
I would cut them off and let them. And I would let them. Actually, no, I'm serious. You can, you know what you can do? I would cut them off and they'll come back for the fall. Right? And you can have fall broccoli. And in fact, you know, if you cut them off, you'll get multiple sprouts. I mean, it'll work for you.
It's true.
I'm just cutting it right to the ground?
Well, no. I mean, I would cut it off so you have some lateral buds, right?
But the lateral buds
will break, and you can have fall broccoli.
Will you get a large, dense curd?
No, you'll get small. You're going to get multiple curds, but that's not really an issue. I mean, they're going to be crispy, and you can just snap them right off.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it won't be a bad moment for you at all.
Mm-hmm. Well, they have a lot. Susan has a lot of plants in, so my advice would be to try it on some of the plants and not on others and see what happens.
Mm-hmm. Well, that would display a lack of faith in my advice. I mean, to try it on only some, really. I mean, what kind of a qualifier is that? Go for it.
You don't appreciate that hedging.
Yeah, that little hedging there. Yeah, you know, yeah, like, come on. Like, we don't trust that advice.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know? we've got Paul and Madison with a question. Hi, Paul.
Hi, guys. Question is, I do have a new garden, and I did a Roundup knockoff on the grass first. And
Paul, you're talking to somebody who can really go.
We have clay soil right in this area, and the tiller wouldn't cut through it, so I had to get the cutter out, sod cutter, get that going. Got it all tilled in with some llama fertilizer and compost up. It was well aged with some leaves in there as well.
Cool,
but anyway,
cool.
Everything looks good except for some peas. Half the row of pea didn't come up. But my corn is very sporadic, and I'm wondering if maybe there was some residual in there. I didn't get all the grass out of the garden before I tilled it. But.
Well, now see, the corn would not be monocot, right? It's not going to be affected by the residuals. You know, corn. You know, especially sweet corns have. You know, usually when you plant them really early in the season, you get some germination issues. They're notoriously fickle, I would say, in terms of their germination.
Especially the super sweet types.
Yes, absolutely. And it's, you know, these are, you know, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised to find that.
Mm-hmm.
So okay. I would not panic. I mean, I would enjoy what comes up. And if you have to, you're not into wrestling any of the deer this year or dealing with those kinds of issues or
no deer.
Raccoons. You're going to have raccoons anywhere near you? I won't wrestle them, by the way.
No,
yeah. I'm not. No, they're, you know, they've got that eye thing. They kind of give you that, you know, that look, you know, kind of frightening to me. The deer I can handle, big
yeah,
brown.
Yeah, it's a more of a fair fight.
Yeah, it's more fair.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
There are some large crows out there pulling some of the plants up, but
now that could be an issue. That could
How
be
big
issue.
Is your sweet corn now, by the way?
About a foot and a half, couple or a two, but out of four rows of 25 feet long, I've got maybe 18, 20 plants.
Ooh.
So,
wow,
yeah,
I don't know what happened there. It may have been, boy, that seems remarkably low.
Dumping the row, dumping it and putting some more squash or something in there.
That, you know what? With that low a population, I think what you can put in some fall vegetables for sure, and the one we just talked about, you know, the
brassicas. Just around what
perfect.
You've got. Yeah.
The brassicas, I would definitely, because otherwise that space is going to go kind of to waste. I mean, you can do a lot of, you can put in the Chinese cabbages that, you know, for the fall as well. Any of the brassicas are going to do well. The radishes you could put in yet.
Beets.
Oh, yeah.
Beets.
Yeah.
Beets.
Perfect.
Sound good.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And Bill in Marshfield, hello to you.
Hi, guys.
Hi.
Got a little haiku for you.
Good.
Okay.
Expecting carrots, I raise my fist in anger. Rabbit stew appeals.
There's some anger there, Bill.
I can detect
a little bit, but beautiful.
I love it. You should email it into our Facebook page.
I will.
Yeah, please email it in.
Go to the Larry Mealer Show Facebook page. We got to have that one up because a lot of people are going to say, what was that one? And frankly, the other folks who sent haikus, I hope you post yours on our Facebook page as well. All right. Sonia in Mount Horeb. Hello.
Hello there. I have a question. We have a really nice asparagus patch, and I think it's probably been 6 weeks we've been eating lovely asparagus, but we always wonder how long should we be cutting it? Should we be stopping that soon?
Well, you got to let it produce a fat. You know, you've got to let the factory grow up and produce so that you can enjoy it next. So I would say right about a week and a half ago, you should have probably stopped enjoying your asparagus. I know. I'm sorry to bring this up, but let it go.
I was eyeing to go out and cut some.
There are other vegetables coming into their maturity, and you have to begin to enjoy them. You have to let the asparagus go. It's got to grow the factory for next year.
Okay, fine. That's what I wanted. Thank you very much.
All right, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. And Lee in Eau Claire, your turn. Hi, Lee.
Hello.
Go ahead. Yeah.
I'm calling regarding the remarks that were made about milkweed.
Okay.
Milkweed really is actually a very good edible vegetable.
It is.
Did you guys know that?
You know, doesn't this always happen to me? Why do I have to be the controversial one here in the, you know, here at WPR? I mean, why do I find it evil?
the shoots of the milkweed in the spring, and then about this time of year, the flower head. And later in summer.
But what about that insidious, sticky, gooey latex?
Yeah,
think about that. How can you saute that away?
It just disappears. You cook it like asparagus or something like, you know, a vegetable like that.
I'm sorry, Lee. I'm glad that I'm so pleased to hear that you feel that this has nutritional benefits.
Oh yes.
I could not bring myself to do this.
Oh, give it a try.
You know, Yul Gibbons. Remember Yul Gibbons?
Yeah.
Right? Do you remember that? Yul Gibbons is no longer with us. And there's a reason for this. And that's because Yul was like, he wouldn't eat anything normal, right? He was like foraging out there, you know, like a brown bear, right? And I think one of the things he may have come across is this milkweed. And I don't know. It's going to be really tough for me to get away, to move on from the sticky, you know, mucilaginous. Sorry. Lee, enjoy. Thank you.
Thanks a lot for calling. By the way, if you'd like to join in, you can reach us at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. You can email us as well at talk@wpr.org or send a note to our Facebook page at The Larry Mealer Show. I got an email from Michael in Spring Green. With the help of Phil Pelletieri, I have found out that I have squash vine borer moths in my garden. Do your guests have suggestions about how to get rid of them?
Wow. This is something I have to deal with as well. Mm-hmm. And although I have searched for an organic solution to this problem, I have not yet found one.
Which for you is quite an expansive search.
Well, anyway. I scratched the surface of the organic. you're going to have to use something that will control. I mean, one of the simplest pesticides that I use is a thing called 7, this carbaryl. You know, I think you can get that at, you know, like Menards or something. And that's something I can use. There's this really dangerous chemical that I would not recommend, but that will control them. And it has this insidious name. It's called like Sniper or something like that. Even the name itself sounds like, you know, you have to stand back from that bottle. But I wouldn't apply that. But I think you might be able to. I mean, 7 might be something that is a reasonably, you know, reasonably safe insecticide.
But once the borer is in your plant,
nothing. Yeah.
You can't there's nothing you can do, no. Right? So, I mean, it is real. If you're if Phil diagnosed this and the borers are in there, you are in a tough spot.
The only thing I look for, the leaves under the, you know, mm-hmm. the eggs under the leaves, you can spot those, mm-hmm. and then you might be able to spray. But you're right, Erwin. If they're in, that's it. There's nothing you can do. I mean, heavens, you don't want to have a pesticide that, you know, that's going to be within the actual fruit itself.
No. We had, speaking of wilt, caller Bart in Beloit wanted to mention, and we should have mentioned this on the tomato wilting plants, that the caller should check for black walnut trees anywhere near the patch. That's how tomatoes react to the toxin, as Judith's poem alluded to.
That's right.
Absolutely.
And it doesn't necessarily have to be on your lawn. As Judith well knows, it can be on the neighbor's lawn, and you'll still have the problem. And Catherine in Wausau has a question or comment. Hi, Catherine.
Hi, how are you? And thanks for the good program again.
Sure.
Okay, my question is, straw being used at not only as kind of a mulch around the plants, but also in the rows to keep down the weeds, good or bad? The straw is already in the garden, but I'm wondering if I did the right thing.
That sounds like a great solution.
Fantastic.
I mean, it's aesthetic. I mean, there's a certain cleanliness and orderliness to it.
As long as there aren't a lot of weed seeds in it.
Well, yeah, that's an issue. The only problem is, the only trouble is this is a big carbon source, mm-hmm. right? So, you know, I am like Mr. Mulch. Mm-hmm. And if I had access to straw, I would use it.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not only Mr. Mulch, I'm Mr. Cheap. So I use Shorewood Hills leaf material.
Fantastic.
This is what I use. And, you know, but it's a huge carbon load. And often what you'll find with those huge carbon loads is that you're going to have to add some nitrogen.
Yeah.
And I would recommend fish emulsion, actually.
But you also have some for sale.
That's hard to find. Fish emulsion is very hard to find. You have to almost order that from one of the seed catalogs.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm so disappointed to hear that.
Or do you have any?
No, I unfortunately did use all of mine up. I don't have any yet available. It was, it was a gift. So I made use of it. But I would have to say the odor was like beyond belief. You know, I showered, you know, for like 3 days, and I was still under my fingernails, you know, was fish. No, it's not a good source. No, I would just say that find a reasonably good source of nitrogen. I mean, it's going to be an issue later on. I mean, as that straw breaks down, that's going to, all the little critters that break down that straw are going to tie up all of your nitrogen. And that's often the limiting nutrient. So you're going to have to probably find a nice source of nitrogen to apply. Mm-hmm. And that's what I do.
Yeah.
Okay.
I use that leaf mulch like crazy.
Yeah.
Because of the high cost. No, it's free. That's why I use so much of it.
That's very good.
Yeah.
You want to make sure that the leaves in there are no black walnut leaves in there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because the black walnut leaves will be just as bad as if you had a black walnut tree near your garden.
But we have a creative solution for that as well.
Which is called the chainsaw?
Which not only the chainsaw, which was done late in the evening, right? Do we have to bring up this cruel story once again? The walnut tree was eliminated from the deciduous forest in our neighborhood late one evening. And no one really knows what happened to that tree.
Could have been lightning, could have been something. Who knows?
I think, you know, the deer.
Yeah, could have been the deer.
I think they munched around and they just took it away.
Yeah.
That's pretty much what I think happened.
That happens.
Yeah. And mm-hmm. then we used the nifty grafting technique, because the one solanaceous crop
this is an extremely creative solution for gardeners. Could you just share that, Jim?
This is where I found out that the only plant that would survive my walnut tree infestation were the
eggplants.
Was the eggplant,
which I think you like about as much as milkweed.
Has about the, Lee, I'm sorry. You know, if you could saute, you know, eggplant with milkweed, that would be like the most ridiculous thing to eat. I just can't imagine. But milkweed has no other value. Excuse me, eggplant has no value whatsoever as a vegetable, as many of our listeners are, I'm sure, will agree with us in this evaluation. And but it can be used as a rootstock, and we grafted. What we did was we grafted the tomatoes onto an eggplant rootstock, and that's how we were able to produce for a couple of years in a field that had.
Well, it's a brilliant idea. Here's an email from Bob that kind of goes along with this. Help! My wife planted eggplants. What? And this is in quote. What natural unquote thing can happen to them so they won't produce fruit?
Is that in the form of a haiku?
It sounded.
Didn't that sound like a haiku was coming? Mm-hmm. I'm sorry. What was that question again?
His wife planted eggplants, and he wants to know what natural thing he could do to prevent them from having fruit.
Oh, okay.
He's not a big eggplant fan,
you
apparently.
Know, this is our kind of guy.
Is it something he's going to be keeping from his wife, or does he mind it? I mean, because
I think he's trying to be keeping it from
keeping it from her. Okay. It has to be a subtle.
Oh, yeah. This is really subtlety turned to me.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I don't think there's any question at all. I think just continuously harvesting them late at night and throwing the fruit away and hoping that the deer will eat them.
You can use them as a sponge, right? In addition, if you need that.
Or, you know, if you are there any anger issues? Are there any neighbors, that you'd like to punish in any way? You can give them away. You know, I mean, if you want to show that sort of level of generosity. On the other hand, I would just harvest them. And then when she walks out there, she'd say, oh, golly, I thought there was some fruit developing. Ah, well, they must have fallen off, honey. I mean, if you can't, if you've been married for any long, extensive period of time, you know how to lie. And so I think just carry on with that tradition.
Oh, well, we have a haiku from Laura in Madison, who wrote this haiku years ago.
Oh, boy.
For my mother, who is a landscape architect and avid gardener. It looks like the snow.
It looks like the snow.
But it is only petals.
But it is only petals.
Plum tree in the wind.
Yeah, oh, beautiful.
Oh, I can't. I know. I closed my eyes and I captured that mental image.
Yeah.
God bless you, Laura.
Yeah.
You did it.
She says,
well,
living
done.
In Texas, we don't get snow very often, but we had a great crop from the plum tree every year.
Mm-hmm. Very nice.
Very nice. Let's go to Sherry in Delavan. Hi, Sherry.
Hi there. How are you?
Good. Thanks for calling.
Oh, yeah. Listen, I'm loving the show. Listen, I have a question about rhubarb. How late in the season can you pick rhubarb, and what's the pros and cons on all of that?
I think that's isn't that the same season as the asparagus? You know, you've got to move on. We have to move on from the asparagus and the rhubarb harvesting. We have to move on to the other vegetables. You know, they are, you know, we can't neglect them.
There's also, there's an interesting health issue there with the rhubarb,
right?
Because they have it has the oxalate, the oxalic acid, which is in a crystalline form. And it's not only abrasive in the leaf blade now, but as the plant gets older, that calcium oxalate is in the petiole, and it's not very good for you. It's a kind of complex as minerals, and it's not an excellent nutrition.
So early on, it's very low within the leaf petiole, and then later as they develop, they increase the oxalate.
It does, and it's a defensive. It's a defensive.
So what the plant is saying, you know, it's the plant's way of saying, stop it,
stop.
Move on.
That's right. That's
you know,
right.
Am I irritating your tongue? Right, move on. So,
are you essentially saying like by the end of June it's
stop
over?
It? Yes.
Yeah. By this time now, I would stop. You will get, interestingly, with rhubarb, sometimes in the fall you'll get some new petioles coming forward, and you might choose those young petioles later on, very late in the summer, early fall. But for now, for the spring crop, I think I agree with Jim. You've got to stop.
Okay.
All right. There you go. Thank you very much for calling. I appreciate your call. Our Vicars of Vegetables with us today, Erwin Goldman and Jim Nienhuis. I'm Larry Mueller here on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for listening in to Garden Talk. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Vicars of Vegetables, Erwin Goldman and Jim Nienhuis. Susan in Oregon has a question for you guys. Hi, Susan.
Well, I just have to call again in support of the beautiful eggplant.
Okay, Susan, you can try.
I love eggplant, and I called once before because you were dissing eggplant. And first of all, it's just by far the most beautiful of the vegetables, but it's really delicious if it's prepared correctly. So my guess is that you guys just don't know how to prepare it, maybe.
No, I mean, really, Susan, I'm very sympathetic to what you're saying, and I do appreciate the beauty of the eggplant, although I did... You know, as you remember, we did challenge our students in our World Vegetable class because some of them, you know, also expressed, you know, some skepticism about, you know, why do we dislike this plant? And they prepared the most magnificent. Do you remember this?
Yes.
They prepared the eggplant parmesan.
Love eggplant parmesan.
Oh, and, you know, and Larry, there is, I have to fully agree with you. And if you add, what we learned from eggplant parmesan is that if you add enough tomato, basil, and if you smother the taste and texture of the eggplant with sufficient amounts of cheese, that dish can be edible.
No. I mean, the dish is made edible by the addition of the eggplant. The eggplant goes so well with those vegetables. It melds all those vegetables together
in a mucilaginous in a textural equivalent of mucilaginous what goop.
But one thing I've learned from growing eggplant, though, is that I have started growing the ichiban, which is the thin one.
Yeah.
Because I find the larger ones, it is easy to let it grow too long and then the seeds get big. But with those smaller ones, they are just great. And I saute them with anything that I can think of. And I just love it when the eggplants are in season.
Is there any chance that you could, you know, I mean maybe, you know, it's possible, Susan, that I have led a sheltered life.
Yeah.
And it's possible that, you know, that, although, you know, unlikely, that I'm wrong, right? So I think in really, in justice, you're not all that far away. We could,
You're willing to receive, in other words, change your mind.
And, you know, taxi, you know, I mean, there must be a curious, there's probably there's the WPR limo. I mean, it's just parked out there.
But you know what? I'm going to work on a haiku, an eggplant haiku for the next for your next show.
Okay,
and it will be as delectable as the eggplant itself.
Wonderful. Okay. Well, you know, it's possible. It's possible. Well, up till now, I would say slightly skeptical of the value of this vegetable, but it's possible.
Brian in Monona says, I think eggplant fruits are quite buoyant, and I can think of a certain regatta they might be used for. And he's speaking, of course, of the pumpkin regatta
we've got our giant squash out at the West Madison Ag Experiment Station right now. I don't think this is actually authorized by anyone in the Agricultural Administration.
No one needs to know.
No, they don't need to know. No, really. At any rate, we've got them somewhere, and I apologize for mentioning where I planted them. But indeed, they're growing along, and we're looking, and we just set up the irrigation yesterday, so we're planning on getting some giant squash, and we could mount little eggplant, banners,
Yeah. I like that idea. Yeah. And when he said buoyant, I thought maybe a string of eggplants as a buoy or as a, it was one of the lines for the race.
Kind of surrounding.
Yeah, surrounding the race course.
And then we could do this very vegetarian. We could have like carrots and beets and we could glue them on to the giant squash and have the vegetable squash regatta.
The nice thing about that solution is the eggplants don't have to be consumed. They are simply a...
They may be toxic, though, to many of the fish, would be my only concern, really. I don't know.
It's a good point.
It's a possibility. Yeah. But, Susan, I know, is going to prepare not only a haiku, but she's going to send over a dish that may turn us around, Irwin, although it is unlikely.
Yeah. Caller Ruth in northern Washera County wanted to share her technique for countering those vine borers, the squash vine borers. She makes a wire frame over the hills and covers them with row cover fabric until the stems toughen up enough to withstand the borers. So she
basically
blocks them up.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Wow. How long can you do that? I mean, the trouble is the squash grows so quickly. It's the only vegetable that with even a modicum of patience that you can sit in front of your garden and actually watch squash grow.
Yeah.
So it's just the speed that which those are going to develop. Although, you know, protecting them early on is a terrific solution, but I don't know.
Oh.
Good for you, though. Good for you for trying it, and good for you for suggesting it.
Liz in Ashland has a question. Hi, Liz.
Hello. Question for you. We've got little white worms in our radishes. I don't know if there's any hope for them now. Just have to be careful before you eat one. Examine it, make sure there's no holes.
Little white worms.
How little are they?
I mean, when you pull them out by their tail, do they growl?
No, I don't touch them.
Okay.
Leave that to the husband. But my question is there anything we can do to prevent them from going into the other vegetables, such as the turnips and like parsnips?
Wow, that's a great question. I don't know the answer to that question.
It's probably a root maggot, isn't it?
Yeah.
And the root maggot is something that, you know, it's going to be very tough for you to control this year. But next year you'll have to rotate and put your radishes in your...
And this is the first year we have the garden. Mm-hmm. We used to live down in the Wausau area and had great soil. And now we're up in the shore of Lake Superior and it's nothing but red clay. And yeah. I'm wondering, is it something we added quite a bit of manure? Could it have come from that?
They overwinter in soil, the root maggots do. And they're a fly, actually. They're the immature stage of a fly that lives there. You know, I don't know if you want to use insecticides. You could use an insecticide on that for this year's crop.
It's probably attracted, though, by the, you know, if it's a fly, it's probably attracted by the organic matter.
Sure.
Is probably what's really happening.
Sure.
So applying all that manure is probably attracted.
It certainly could have.
The maggot.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, if you don't want to control it with an insecticide this year, You just need to make sure about rotation for next year.
Okay. And then I have a secondary question. Was listening to your talk on the black walnuts.
Mm-hmm.
How far away is a tree needing to be? We have one on the other end of the yard.
It's too close. No matter how far I assume you have a normal sort of size yard.
Well, it's kind of a family compound. We have about three houses and a restaurant all together.
So if you look at the
yards all combined in the center.
So if you look at the black walnut tree and you look at the leaves, where the leaves, the drip line, and then you go out another 20, 25 feet beyond the drip line.
And you're pretty close to the garden.
Yeah, so if you're close to the garden from, I think it's about 20 or 25 feet that those little feeler roots.
Oh, sure. You know, one horticultural way of thinking about this is the dimension of the upper part of the plant, right? This is one of the things people often use. Oh. If you think about the width of the whole upper aerial part of the plant,
right,
and imagine that distance at least. It's usually more than that distance.
Well, that's what I'm saying. It's about 20 beyond the drip line of the tree. It's another 20 or 25 feet.
Absolutely.
Okay.
So just shift your garden a little bit. I mean, you're among family and friends.
Put a lot of work into this garden, so I don't know.
Yeah.
But the trees belong.
I'm really disappointed to hear about that. That maggot into the radishes. You know, I wonder if that isn't, you know, the seasonal flights of those are going to be. I mean, those aren't going to be constant throughout the year. I bet that flight is over, and I bet a fall crop would be fine. I mean, I bet there's a reasonable possibility that a fall crop might be, you know, not damaged. So I would replant.
Replant.
That's just a suggestion out of the blue. I have no basis for that suggestion other than just...
When would you suggest
I would just
replanting?
Faith. July 15th.
Very specific. Thank you.
Yeah. All right. Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your help. And you might consider on your tomatoes or any Solanaceae, you might think in terms of pots,
yeah,
growing the tomatoes in pots, because that can help. And be sure to get rid of every single leaf in the fall. You don't want the leaves mulching into the soil. So for sure, you want to get rid of those black walnut leaves. So
how many? I'm getting a little frightened now because my cheapness has driven me towards, you know, this, you know, the source of leaves, and now I have to, the thought of me actually grubbing through that to try to find black walnut leaves is just a little frightening.
Or possibly purchasing the compost. Is that out of the question? It's out of the
question. You know, I am a state employee. You know what I mean? That's kind of out of the question. I don't know. Just the thought of that is kind of frightening. Mm-hmm. I'm just hoping that it will decompose. After the tree miraculously disappeared,
things got better, didn't
things
they?
Things got better.
Yeah.
Things got better. So the juglans must have leached out of the soil there. So, and there are some vegetables that were, you know, that were very resistant to it. The tomato, unfortunately, is extremely the most susceptible, and it's the most susceptible to a lot of these lawn chemicals, and it's very susceptible to, you know, you'll just see these damages constantly on that particular vegetable.
Our guests today on Garden Talk, the Vicars of Vegetables, UW-Madison Horticulture Professors Irwin Goldman and Jim Nienhuis. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. And for this edition of Garden Talk, we have the Vicars of Vegetables, Jim Nienhuis and Irwin Goldman, who are professors of horticulture at UW-Madison. Great to have them along, and thank you so much for listening in. Before we get back to the garden, I do want to remind you that next week, WPR will mark the 150th anniversary of the Civil War with special programs in news, music, and talk. These specials will take place on both networks, July 3rd through the 9th. And I hope you take a look at the schedule. If you go to WPR.org, just go to WPR.org over on the left side of that page. You can click on something that says Civil War, I think, and we have the whole list of things. And I know there are a lot of people who are kind of Civil War buffs and interested in it. I know we will be talking on Wednesday, is it? Tuesday. Tuesday, we will have a couple of programs that on this show that deal with the Civil War. One, the Native American role in the Civil War. And the other one is escaping me at the moment, but it...
I think it's Vegetables of the Civil War, Larry.
Vegetables of the Civil War. No. Sort of Wisconsin's involvement in the Civil War. So I'm looking forward to that. But we also are looking forward to what kinds of questions we're getting and what kinds of haikus we're getting. We got an email from Dan who says, I'm allergic to eggplant, which... Which,
what a blessing.
Not really to my chagrin. I choke and cough. It's much suited, this purple monster, for a batting range. So
there's some wisdom out there, Larry, in the listener community.
Yes, there certainly is. Jeff in Stockbridge says, I have very good success using row covers over my radishes to prevent the maggots. Mm. Also works great for turnips and rutabagas.
Ooh, that's a good idea.
Floating row covers, yeah, and they're easy, easy and cheap to go along with.
It's not an issue for me, Larry.
Gene and Madison, we're on to you. Hi, Gene.
Hello. Nice to be on your show.
Thank you for calling.
I have some organic solutions to some problems. Well used 70 years ago. Okay, the lady with the weeds in the asparagus patch.
Yep.
Dad used salt in the spring.
And butter, I think, is actually kind of like the perfect combination. I'd like to recommend that.
When the little spears are just coming up, you just lightly salt the area, and it discourages the grasses and weeds and
Interesting.
Stuff.
Interesting.
Not something we can recommend as because it's not labeled, and there are some issues if you put too much down.
Oh, of course.
It's like the old days. We used to control, especially in carrots, we used to control the weeds. My father, you know, because we were vegetable growers, we used to control it by spraying kerosene.
Sure.
Yeah. You know, because apparently those leaves are waxy enough that they were not able to. We're not recommending that any longer either. Yeah.
Wasn't that organic according to your definition?
That was even based on my definition. That was not organic. Okay. Kerosene was not one that I would recommend.
Okay, so on to the next one. Rhubarb. Rhubarb suffers from the snails and slugs that you talk about, and especially this year because of the wetness. Put a little ash around the base of the rhubarb in the spring. You will have no trouble because those little critters walk across the or crawl across the ash, and the ash turns to an acid, which burns their little foot.
Yeah, that so, there's that is
this is potash, right? This is
wood
ash.
Okay,
yeah, wood is good. Yeah.
Okay, what about? Is there anything that from the charcoal barbecue that we might be able to use here? Because actually, I think that would be universally available.
I think that would work fine.
Okay,
yeah, sure. That's perfect. Yeah, yeah.
Not big lumps of the charcoal.
No,
but, you know, just a silt of ash. Okay, and number three, I got this fairly recently. If you've got bugs that are crawling, in the case of the person that told me it was on a rose bush, and they crawl up the stem and do their damage, well, anything like that, put a layer of Vaseline at the base of the stems, around the stem, and the little bugs can't crawl up.
That was my mother's universal cure-all for everything that ailed me when I was a child, was Vaseline. I was basically dipped in that, right, on a regular basis. So it's nice to know, you know, and I never had, you know, any bugs. Yeah. So they apparently I didn't realize it at the time, but they just couldn't climb onto me.
They were there, but they were there.
If it rains, over time it's going to wear off, so you'd need to maybe reapply it. Well, thank you, Gene. Thank you very much. Appreciate your call. And we have, another caller, Paul from from Kenosha. So let's go there. Hi, Paul.
Hi. I have a little haiku for you.
Good.
Okay.
My milkweed parachutes blow through air, wafting next year's delicious crop to Vicarville.
Very nice.
Oh, do you sense that we generate some anger out there, Erwin?
Yeah, I think people were upset about the milkweed issue.
But how could you possibly eat this? You know, really, I don't know. Paul, are you another lover of the milkweed? Do you sauté it?
And I also want to tell you that as a plant geneticist, I'm working on giving this quality to eggplant and bell pepper seeds.
And just for the specific goal of irritating Erwin and I. Right?
Just so that Vicarville may be productive.
Thanks, Paul. Oh, boy. Let's see.
We do ignite their passions. You know, it's not like, you know, we are not, we may not like milkweed, but we are not milk toast. You know,
the thing about milkweed is the egg-laying plant and the food plant for monarch butterflies. Right.
Are you saying you're against the monarch butterfly, Jim?
Can I make a public statement?
Is that what you're really saying?
No, I'm not. I have nothing against the monarch butterfly, and in the woods, the milkweed, you know, can persist, no problem. The perennial milkweed in my garden is a pernicious, right, evil weed, and I have tried to eliminate it as best I can. And even though I may be encouraged to sauté it on this program, I could never bring my. How could you get away from that milty, bitter latex? I mean, how could you do that?
Well, here we are back to eggplant. Facebook post from Nicholas. Eggplant baba ganoush is a delicious way to eat eggplant. It is very similar to hummus and can be made with grilled or baked eggplant.
Which only goes to confirm my earlier opinion that if you can add enough other edible things and, you know, destroy the flavor and texture of the eggplant, almost anything will be edible.
Yeah, I think you're basically transforming it into something else.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, if you put enough cheese
and
on
garlic.
It, you could eat it. I mean, basically.
We've got a haiku from Susan in Menominee Falls, not having to do with the eggplant. This is a nice one.
Okay.
Breeze sighs through the boughs.
Breeze sighs through. I'm kidding.
Whispering a cedar song.
Whispering a cedar. Oh, yes.
To soothe the weary. What do you think? That's pretty nice, isn't it?
Erwin, wake up. We just dozed off.
That was very calming.
That was
that was nice.
Yeah.
Well, Lucille in Green Bay has a question, so let's go there. Hi, Lucille.
Hi. How are you?
Good. Thank you. How are you?
Well, I am just fine, and I have a couple of comments. Like, I have a list here in front of me, and I have five of them. First of all, I have no internet contact, so put all telephone numbers on the line. I'm not the only one. And the other one is the black walnut. If you put about 2 to 3 feet of any kind of ground or mulch or anything on top, you can plant anything. I mean, I planted tomatoes, I planted irises, I planted peppers about 2-3 feet from my black walnut tree. You gotta have.
But you put some kind of mulch on top of the soil.
Yeah, you know, like.
And you plant it in the mulch.
Or hay or straw or whatever, you can get it from a farmer.
Wow. Cool. I didn't know you could do that.
2 or 3 feet. And then about 2 feet away from the trunk of the tree, you can plant anything. I did anyways. Let's put it that way. I did. And another thing with the clay soil, if you go and find some farmer that has really old shit, that crap hay straw that they want to get rid of, you work that into your soil, into the clay soil, it's going to loosen it up, and you can plant lots of stuff in there. And as far as the eggplant, I'm not, I think it tastes terrible. But anyways, if you mix it with like salsa or you know, like if you make any kind of tomato thing and just pulverize it and mix it in the hay, it's got a lot of nutrients in it.
Well, how many nutrients does it have in it?
I don't think it has any, actually. I think it's the vegetable equivalent of the, you know, of those polyester sponges that you buy at Menards, really. And I think if you chop up the polyester sponges, you know, you get the 3-pack with the 3 different colors, you know, the
and
yellow,
you put
green.
Some, you add tomato.
You add tomato, and you just pile on the cheese, and it's edible. You know, and I think Lucille really goes for it. And if she can grow under a walnut tree, you know, this lady has some talent, you know, so let's go for it.
All right. Thanks, Lucille. Thank you for calling. And now we go back to Anne, who has, she says they're kind of haikus.
Ooh.
So here's a couple. Put seedlings in dirt-filled pot.
Put seedlings in dirt-filled pot.
From the backyard plot.
From the backyard plot.
They died.
Oop.
Potting soil is not dirt. Who knew?
Oh, that's good.
And then, well, here's one that's more like a haiku. Gentle basil, rosemary, why must you wither? Nightshade fruits are too scary.
Ooh, mm-hmm. Ooh, 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 yeah.
Yeah? Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. There's another one. Gary or Carl in Appleton, you're next. Hi, thank you for calling.
Yes, how are you?
Good.
Happy Friday.
To you as well.
I have a couple of raised garden beds that we just put in this spring. We went and got some good soil from the local garden shop, and our tomatoes and our peppers, our bell peppers, they're blooming. The plant looks healthy, but then the bloom turns brown and falls off. What's going on?
Hmm. Oh. Unexpected. Where are you located, Carol?
In Appleton.
Appleton, let's see. You know, if the buds are blasting, that this is usually a problem of high temperatures. But I wouldn't expect that you would be having those kinds of high temperatures in Appleton.
Well, it's a little bit warm today, but up till now, not at all.
No, I mean, I've had this problem in the past years, but it's always associated with, I mean, you get buds that will just simply, you know, they won't, the problem is that the pollen won't set. You know, the temperatures get so high. Pollen is really, really sensitive to high temperatures. And if the flowers don't set, the buds will fall off. And that's due to, but that's to me, it's been associated with high temperatures. But boy, I don't know. You got me stumped there, Kyle.
There is a disease. I mean, there's a disease called bud blast, right? That occurs on some ornamental plants and some
vegetables.
But
I think it's almost always.
It's a high temperature.
It's almost associated with high temperatures, or you know, it's because the pollen, you know, is so metabolically active, little tissue, right, that it in high temperatures it will simply
definitely
burn up.
But isn't there a bud blast that's also caused by a pathogen? I could be wrong about
that. I mean, it probably is, mm-hmm. You know, but I'm saying the most logical course is probably a temperature thing.
Mm-hmm.
But since he hasn't had high temperatures, I suppose we should go to Plan B. And it may be a disease, but he says he's got new soil, you know, all of those things, so I wouldn't expect that.
Yeah,
maybe
it's got really good composted soil from a local garden place, and they market it as garden soil.
Well, maybe it's just a matter of just some patience. It could very well be that you know, you just happen to hit some hot nights or hot days. That because I'm expecting that this might be a pretty good year. I'm going to go boldly predict that this will be a good year for peppers and tomatoes.
Mm-hmm. I hope so.
Yeah.
Thanks, Carl. I'm probably we don't know for sure. It might have been the heat. There might be a pathogen involved, but we're not really sure. Loretta in Barron County, you have a question or comment. Hi, Loretta.
Hi. I was really surprised you told the lady to cut her broccoli plants back. I've been planting broccoli in the spring when I plant everything else for 50 years, and I think if I waited till fall here in Barron County to plant them, the plant would be frozen before I got broccoli.
Ooh, okay, well, that must be a little north.
Anyway, I just cut the head off, the main head off, and then keep cutting those side shoots, and I freeze it, and I have broccoli all summer. And also, the lady with radishes with worms, if you sprinkle wood ash on top of your seed when you plant, I don't think she'll have any problem.
Oh, a little wood ash, the same kind of theory as with the slugs.
Yep, right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yep, there we go. Thank you.
Okay.
Appreciate the caller. Huh?
Mm-hmm.
And we have Kathy in Richland County here next. Let's go to Kathy. Hi, Kathy. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Larry. Hi, guests. Gosh, I'm glad I got my call in. My question is about potato beetles. I have read conflicting information that they overwinter in the soil, and then other information that they don't. So I planted my potatoes, covered them with, you know, rotten straw hair, whatever. And I put Remay over them. Now, if they overwinter in the soil, that's not exactly the most brilliant idea I would ever have, because obviously I would be trapping them. Can you tell me if putting Remay on your potatoes to prevent the beetles is proper, or do they overwinter in the soil?
I don't know.
Where do they come from?
Everyone knows.
They're the most miserable thing, insect, one of the most miserable insects.
And they emanate a sort of potato beetle odor that is really also offensive.
Disgusting.
They can adapt to insecticides faster than almost any other insect.
Well, I've hand-picked them in the past.
Oh, that's disgusting. Yeah.
It is disgusting.
Yeah.
I mean, they feel like little flesh.
Oh, balls. Yes.
But
that's a good way to get rid of them.
Yeah. Irwin, help us. Is there a way to, is there a way around this?
I mean, I don't, in terms of control, we can come to that later, but they do overwinter. Or yeah. They go into the soil in different parts of their life cycle. The pupae do, and they actually pupate down in the soil. So that is part of their life cycle.
So get the remay off from there.
Well, I don't know. I don't know about that method of control. I don't know enough about it, but there is a part of their life cycle where they are going to be in the soil as pupae.
And they come out as kind of maroonish red sort of worm like things, yep. And then they turned into these striped beetles.
That's
yeah,
right.
And then I've seen pictures online of the little yellow eggs that lay under, you know, on the bottom of a leaf.
What did they sequester to give them that horrid odor? That must be the alkaloids.
It could be the fish emulsion that they're using. I don't know.
Well, I guess I'll just crawl around on my hands and knees and peek under there periodically.
Or you can follow Jim's organic rules for pest control, which include things like 7, right? And you can probably control them with that.
No, they don't work. It doesn't work anymore.
Doesn't really?
No.
Oh, boy.
It's one of the it's one of the chemicals that the potato beetle has become quite
Resistant to. Oh, heavens.
There's the fungus. There is a fungal control that people use, and I don't know how effective that is.
Yeah, against the potato beetles. So, but they do overwinter in the soil.
Why don't the deer eat them? Yeah. Why do they have to eat my peppers? Why don't they eat? Why can't deer selectively eat? You know, like potato beetles.
Yeah. A friend of mine called, and we were talking about it on the phone, and he said he planted potatoes. First year, no potato beetles. Second year, some potato beetles because he's planting in the same spot. Third year, this year, lots of potato beetles.
You got to get out there and move your spot. Yep. I've done that. And then, you know, it's just, you know, you come home from work and go through and pick them off and throw them in a bucket. And I sprayed them, you know, with just some soap water before, but, you know, that doesn't seem very effective either.
Lucia, the bottom line is, have you noticed there's not been one potato beetle haiku? And there's a reason for that, because no one can capture a positive mental image of that critter, right?
That's the truth.
Right. No.
Thank you. Happy picking out there, Kathy. Oh, man. A caller said alternate potato rows with green beans.
Then you get bean beetles, right?
Then you never get... potato beetles, at least that caller doesn't. I wanted to mention, by the way, that Judith's going to be talking about birds with Noel Cutright and Bill Volkert on Monday. And if you have photos of birds you'd like to help with IDing, I hope you'll post them on our Facebook page. Go to the Larry Mueller Show. If you can do it over the weekend, that'd be wonderful. If you've got a bird ID or another question, certainly go to the Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show and post it, post that picture. There was a great haiku.
We should do that with us. We should have people post, you know, pictures of their vegetable. If we'll ever be invited back. I have no idea.
Here's a haiku to end the program.
Oh, my gosh.
From John. And John says, red barn in morning.
Red barn in morning.
Garden looks on anxiously.
The garden looks on anxiously.
Shooting chippies dead. Chipmunks.
there is some anger out there.
Why is it that we bring that out in the listening audience?
I don't know, but they are reacting to something.
Yeah, there's the eggplant. You know,
do you think when the weather guys are on here, there's this much?
Let me identify your birds. Yeah. You know, is that going to cause any WAPR listeners? You know, with this level of anger to call? No, not at all. But for us, for some reason, Irwin, I have no idea why.
We'll have you back anyway. Oh, yeah. Thanks, guys. Jim Nienhuis and Irwin Goldman, UW Madison horticulture professors, our vicars of vegetables, will be back in another time. We certainly will do that. And again, Judith's on Monday for me, talking birds with Noel Cutright and Bill Volkert. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network.